When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Dirt Show. Look, I don't know what went on or didn't go on under the covers between Fannie Willis, the Fawnie, I guess she calls herself, Fawnie Willis, the elected district attorney, Fulton County, who is prosecuting Donald Trump for January 6th. I don't know what went on or didn't go on between her and Nathan Wade, the lawyer who she appointed and gave $650,000 of state funds to help prosecute Trump. I don't know whether there was an affair or there wasn't an affair, but my God, can you imagine anything more stupid than allowing that suspicion to arise based on travels together and records? We'll wait for a final judgment because they'll probably, in the end, both be summoned to testify in the divorce case. But how can anybody be so stupid? Put yourself in Fawnie Willis's position. Here she is, an obscure district attorney elected in a county in Georgia. Finally, she gets the case of her lifetime. I mean, who would want more than to prosecute the former president, possibly future president of the United States, on state charges? He couldn't even pardon himself or get a pardon. And she has the case, and she can do the prosecution. She can pick whoever she wants to help her. I don't know why there aren't enough prosecutors in the office, but she has to go outside the office, and she picks a guy who doesn't seem to have a lot of experience in RICO-type cases. And let me tell you, I have an enormous amount of experience in RICO cases. They are complex and difficult. And in Georgia, a RICO conviction carries with it a mandatory prison term. Imagine the man running for president of the United States, and he gets convicted and he has to go to jail. When he goes to jail is really up to the judge, but he can't escape imprisonment. Imagine if he gets elected and has to move the Oval Office to the state penitentiary. No, that's not going to happen. But and I just make these points to indicate how unbelievably stupid Fawnie Willis has to be. What incredible lack of judgment. And it's not as if she doesn't know. I just saw on Newsmax, I was interviewed about this subject, and they had some excerpts from statements made by Fawnie Willis when she was running for office. And what she said, let's remember, in Georgia, adultery is still a crime. Well, if she did this, she did it with a married man. And my recollection from teaching criminal law for 50 years is that you're an adulteress if you commit, if you have sex with a married man. He's probably more criminal as the adulterer, but you know, it takes two to tango. In any event, she also says that I'm the DA here. And if any of you local, you know, underling DAs, assistant DAs, if any of you have improper, inappropriate romantic relationships with anybody, that's not what we will tolerate in this office. Duh. Look in the mirror. What could be more inappropriate than being the district attorney who decides who to pick to have special counsel prosecuting the case to make more money than he's probably ever made in his life, $650,000. What could be more inappropriate than sleeping with the guy? Now, again, don't know. Maybe she's not. Maybe it's entirely innocent. Maybe they had a platonic friendship in which they traveled together to various interesting parts of the world. I don't know, but the appearance is there. And I would suspect that it will result in ethics charges and motions for recusal and disqualification. At the moment, there doesn't seem to be enough to throw the case out, because to throw the case out, President Trump and the other defendants, there are more than a dozen of them, I guess, would have to show prejudice. And hard to show prejudice, probably the reverse. Probably they've been helped by having a less than competent or a less than exceptional prosecutor, less experienced, actually running the prosecutions. They probably benefit from it. They certainly have benefited from the negative publicity that has been associated with the office of this district attorney. But I just want to go back to the amazing, incredible, unbelievable lack of judgment. Even if she's technically innocent, how do you let yourself be involved in a situation like that? Even the appearance of justice, you don't have a relationship that appears to be romantic with the man that you're picking to give $650,000 of state funds to, who seems to be far less qualified than the person who is getting less money, who has a lot of experience in RICO prosecution. So she has to explain this. She can't remain silent. There have to be hearings. Now, you know, so far, the governor of Georgia, see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. The attorney general of Georgia, the same thing. Everybody seems to be protecting everybody there. But this is not a Georgia case. This is a national case, indeed an international case. This case may determine who the next president of the United States is. There are polls that show that based on an indictment alone, there won't be much influence on the election. The obviously, the base, the Trump base, is not going to change, even if he's convicted. And the anti-Trump base is not going to change. But there are independents, a lot of them, in the country. And polls show that independents may very well be influenced by whether there's a conviction. And whether there's a conviction will depend on the quality of the prosecution. And if Fani Willis doesn't believe she's qualified to prosecute the case, and many elected prosecutors are not, some are, but many are not, you appoint the best possible person. And when you appoint the friend, or some perhaps more than a friend, there's always going to be suspicion and doubt as to why he was picked. Why is he the recipient of $650,000? And remember, this is not the kind of guy who had a practice where he was making $1 million a year and, oh, well, I'll take a cut in salary. I'll go down to $650,000 to do a public service. I don't know the facts. I don't know how much money he was making, but I'll bet you anything that the $650 represents an enormous increase in income. As far as I read in the papers, he was mostly doing minor cases that don't produce the kinds of fees that he was earning in the case. So let's hear from her. What does she have to say? How does she explain the fact that she went on television a few years ago and talked about adultery? It shouldn't be a crime, but it is a crime. Perhaps only a misdemeanor, but it is a crime in probably a dozen states, maybe more. At common law, it was a capital crime. You get executed for being an adulteress or an adulterer. Of course, there's a famous story in the book of Daniel about a woman, a young, beautiful woman who was married, and two older men approached her and said, unless you have sex with us, we will say that you had sex with us, and therefore you will be executed as an adulteress. And she refused, and they did testify against her initially, and she was sentenced to, or could have been sentenced to, death. And then Daniel came in, the great lawyer, and said he wanted to cross-examine the two older men, and he insisted that they be cross-examined separately and neither hear the testimony of the other. And during the testimony, Daniel elicited what tree she was under when she committed adultery, and they each had different trees. And the judge, throughout the case, sentenced false accusers to the death penalty, because back in the day, if you were falsely accused, you get the penalty that would have been inflicted on the person if he had been truthfully accused. I wish that were the law today. I wish we would prosecute false accusers to the limits of the law. I have a personal interest in that, but it's the right thing to do. There are too many false accusations out there, and I wish false accusers would be punished seriously and investigated as seriously as the people they accused are investigated. But that perhaps is a utopian sense in the world of Me Too, believe only one side, don't believe the other side. But that's for a different day. But, she came out against adultery and said it's a crime. And she came out against improper relationships between law enforcement officials and the people who work for them. And by the way, under the general rules, it doesn't matter whether it's consensual or not, if there's a hierarchical relationship. And one has to look at the dates and the chronology and everything. But if, in fact, a prosecutor is having a relationship with a man who she then picks to become the prosecutor in the case and earns a lot of state money, there is a problem, and that problem has to be explored. So I hope that ethics committees look into this. Right now, ethics committees are one-sided. Under Project 65, that's the group that accused me. I represented Donald Trump, of course, on the floor of the Senate, so I was obviously guilty of some ethical violation. And they accused me of an ethical violation, which I am fighting, of course, and hopefully will succeed. But ethics has become a tool of the hard left against conservatives and against people like me who are liberals, but who will defend conservatives. And so let's see. Somebody called me today also and said they wondered why Hunter Biden hadn't been looked at by the D.C. bar. He's apparently, according to this phone call I got, or maybe it was a TV interview, he is a member of good standing of the D.C. bar, and yet he is admitted to things, drug use and other kinds of things, that might warrant an investigation if a complaint were filed. And of course, he's now under indictment twice. So again, you can't have a double standard. Whatever the standard is for the investigation of conservatives or Republicans, you have to have the same standards for liberals and Democrats or anybody else or nonpartisan people. You have to have one standard, and we're moving away from that in our country. Nobody seems to want to have a single standard. Free speech for me, but not for thee. Due process for me, but not for thee. That's the world we're living in today. The media has a double standard. We have a double standard toward Israel. We have a double standard toward conservatives. In academia, we have a double standard based on ideology, based on race, based on sexual orientation. We have double standards that are rampant. There are more double standards than there are single standards. And if there's one thing that the rule of law demands, is that the rules have to be the same for all. The Bible instructs judges, and it gives them two instructions. One, don't take bribes. Okay, that's obvious, because bribes blind the eyes even of the most righteous. But that comes second in the Bible in the book of Deuteronomy. The first rule is do not recognize faces. Lo takir panim, to cite the original Hebrew. Lo takir panim. Do not recognize faces. Do not do justice based on who the person is, what their face looks like, whether you recognize their faces. Do justice without regard. The Bible goes so far as to say that you should not even favor the poor in doing justice. There's more about that in the biblical approach to justice than anything else. Do not put stumbling blocks in front of the blind. Do not favor the rich. Do not favor the poor. Single standard, that's the essence of biblical justice. It's the essence of the Old Testament, the New Testament, the Quran. Every legal system proclaims a single standard of justice, and I know of no legal system, certainly not our own, that applies a single standard of justice, particularly today. Today, justice has become weaponized. It's weaponized by both sides. Whoever is in power uses it and uses it improperly. And I'm against it no matter who it is. I'm against it when President Trump says he's going to take revenge or implies he's going to take revenge against people who are opposed to him. And I'm equally opposed to Democrats who use the system improperly and apply a double standard. I want a single standard. Let the chips fall where they may. Let justice be fair and honest and blind. Remember the mask. Remember the mask over the eyes of justice. That comes from the Bible. It's not from the Greek philosophers. It's from the Bible, which is 1,000 years before the Greeks. That's where it comes from. Don't recognize faces. How do you prevent a judge from recognizing faces? Put a blindfold on them. But today, the blindfold is lifted. People, judges, peek under the blindfold. And you can tell how a case is going to come out often by who the defendant is and who the judge is. That's not right. You know, I got a letter today from a good friend of mine, a great, great lawyer, who wrote a letter to a whole bunch of people saying, we have to respect judges. We have to respect judges. I wrote back. I said, no, we don't. Judges have to earn their respect like anybody else, like members of Congress. Do we respect members of Congress? Do I respect Congressman Bowman of New York, who recently had an event where he praised Norman Finkelstein, the man who said it warmed every part of his heart to see Hamas murdering, raping, and killing people. He supported Hamas, and Congressman Bowman supported Finkelstein. Do I respect him? No, I don't respect him. And I don't respect judges that do things that do not warrant respect. Judges should be blind to personalities. They should be blind to partisan affiliations. They should be blind to whether you're a conservative or a liberal, black or white, male or female. And unless they are, you don't have my respect. Just wearing a robe doesn't give you respect. You have to earn it, like you have to do it in every aspect of life. When I walked up to the lectern at Harvard Law School at age 25 to start teaching, yes, I was an assistant professor, the youngest in the school's history. I deserved no respect unless I earned it. I worked every day to earn the respect of my students, not the love. We disagreed about a lot of things, not the political support, but just the respect. People knew I was doing it straight and teaching it straight. And I expect that from my judges as well. My judges, your judges, they're not the kings. You know, the old joke that Sigmund Freud is summoned by God's chief assistant. And the chief assistant says, you know, you have to go examine God. He's having delusions of grandeur. Oh, my God, Freud says, he's having delusions of grandeur. He's God. Who does he think he is? And the assistant says, God is having delusions of grandeur. He thinks he's a federal judge. Every lawyer I know who appears before federal judges knows that joke. It's not a particularly funny joke. It's just that judges think they're God. And many of them act arrogantly and impossibly and injudicially and unfairly. Many don't. They're great judges. I've clerked for two of them. I befriended many of them in my career. Some of the greatest people I know have been judges. Some of the worst people I know have been judges. And the robe shouldn't be able to disguise and fail to distinguish between the two. You know why in England they used to have wigs and robes and everybody looked the same. Everybody was white, male, and they had a wig and the same costume. And the reason was that they wanted everybody to look the same because they wanted it to appear that the law is an abstract concept. It doesn't matter who the judge is, but it does matter who the judge is. When clients call me and say, can you predict for me what the appeal will come out? I don't ask him what the issues are. Of course, I do. Ultimately, tell me the panel, who are the judges. I'll tell you what the case, how it will come out. That's not right. I shouldn't be able to predict the outcome of a case depending on who the judges are, who the justices are. But that's what's happened in our society. And Fannie Willis is contributing to that. I mean, she's very human, obviously. She goes on vacation, takes trips with the person that she appointed to be the special prosecutor. Again, we have to have the chronology clear. We have to know when it happened. We have to know whether there may have been a reason for it. Maybe she was going to a judicial conference meeting, but why she would take him, I don't know. And we have to know when the decision was made to appoint, who the other people were. Was it a merit appointment? What has he been doing? I think every aspect of that should be examined. She is now in the public light. And remember, often the judge is not the most important person in a case. Often the most important person in the case is the prosecutor. Judges don't bring cases. They simply resolve them. It's the prosecutor who decides what to prosecute and for what crimes to prosecute and what evidence to admit. So there's no more important job in a democracy than a prosecutor. And the prosecutors have to absolutely be above any suspicion, above any reproach. And I have to tell you that Fannie Willis does not seem to satisfy that test. Persuade me I'm wrong, present evidence, but I want to see all the facts in the case. I want to know, and I want to know how the people of Fulton County elected somebody that shows such bad judgment. I mean, here she goes on television, complains about people committing adultery, says that you can't have improper relationships, and then opens herself up to the very charges that she has run her campaigns against. So let's keep an open mind. Let's maintain a presumption of innocence. But surely there's enough to warrant a very thorough investigation. And the one thing we shouldn't allow is the facts to be hidden. The facts have to come out. Yeah, there's a divorce case. Yeah, but that's not the important thing. The important thing is we have to know about the relationship between Fannie Willis and Nathan Wade. That is absolutely essential. I don't care about the personal aspects of it. Who sleeps with who? You know, that's not something that concerns me. But when it's the prosecutor and the person who's appointed to prosecute the former president of the United States and the possible future president of the United States, we'll know more about that, obviously, in days to come with the primaries that are coming up. But that's what it appears to be. And burden of proof has shifted. The burden of proof is now on Fannie Willis. Because remember, the presumption of innocence operates in criminal cases. It doesn't operate in politics. And it doesn't operate in the law enforcement as in terms of non-criminal cases, but just whether a person is doing the right thing. And so I think the presumption has shifted. And I think she now has the burden of coming forward and explaining everything. No secrets, nothing discreet, nothing hidden. We want to know the truth, not for gossipy purposes, but for purposes of knowing whether there were any violations of ethical or legal norms. Let's hear. We'll follow this story closely in weeks to come as more information emerges. Okay. Let's look at some letters. Okay. If two candidates come from the same state, can they appear on the ballot for that state? The answer is yes. Or are they simply not allowed to count the electors of that state after the election? No elector for president can vote for two people from the same state. So they can be, a person can be elected president with a vice president from the same state. But in this case, if they both are residents of Florida, then he loses the third largest number of electoral votes. So I don't think that's going to happen. And the next question is, if Florida was a must-win and Trump DeSantis ticket won the state, and would neither candidate achieve 270, causing congressional delegations to vote? We don't know the answer to that, but it's certainly possible. Now, there's another answer, and it's implicit in one of the questions that I got. I'm not going to get to that question. But what could happen is that Trump could move. It doesn't say when you're a resident. It just says if you're a resident at the time, essentially when the electors cast their vote. So he could move to New Jersey. He has a hotel there. I've been there, Baumeister. He could move back to New York. I don't think he's moving back to New York so fast. They don't like him there. But he might conceivably could move to New Jersey. DeSantis can't move because he's the governor. But my prediction, DeSantis is not going to be the nominee. Okay. Professor, you describe Stefanik as an election denier. Okay, but out of fairness, do you also apply that to Al Gore, Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, John Kerry, Joe Biden, Jerry Nadler? No, of course not. They didn't deny the elections. The opposite. Particularly, look at Al Gore. I think Al Gore won the presidency in 2000. I think more Floridians intended to vote, to cast their vote for him than for President Bush. But he was a gentleman. He got up there and he declared Bush to be the victor. And I don't know what you're talking about with Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton. They all acknowledged the results of elections, but President Trump did not. He's an election denier. And I think Stepanek is an election denier. I think there's an enormous difference. And I myself would not vote for an election denier unless they could present the evidence that would convince me that they were right. But I don't think they were. If you continue to stand for Joe Biden and the Dems, you will lose all credibility, maybe with you. But I'm going to vote for who I think is either the best or the least worst. And right now, that is Joe Biden. Okay. Professor, several of Trump's lawyers signed plea deals in Georgia to avoid more serious charges. True. Under what circumstances can they break client confidentiality to testify against the former president? There are a lot of exceptions. One, generally, if you admit that you gave legal advice that was part of a criminal activity or facilitated a crime, that's not covered. But also, under rules of some jurisdictions, at least, a lawyer can break the privilege to protect himself or herself from serious exposure. So that might be a justification as well. We'll have to wait and see. Just because Biden cooperated doesn't make it legal for him to have classified documents. I agree with you. I think Biden was guilty of possession of classified material. He may have a knowledge or intent defense, but isn't the cooperation that makes it that way. Trump, on the other hand, had the executive power. He and only he had the power to declassify with actions or thought. Not with thought, I don't think, but with actions. But he said when he waved that paper in front of the journalist, he said, I could have declassified this, but I didn't. And so I think that the evidence is sufficient to go to the jury. Here's a question related to that. Just because he said he was waving a classified document does not mean he really was. He was goofing around. Well, the question is, who has the burden on that? Obviously, in a criminal case, the prosecution always has the burden. So they will have to prove that he was holding an actual classified document. I think they won't have any problem doing that. But I can imagine a judge also saying he said it was classified. Therefore, that burden has been satisfied. Now the burden shifts to him to disprove it. Don't know how the courts would come out on that one, but I have to tell you, I don't think that he's going to argue that the material wasn't classified. I think he's going to acknowledge and admit it and come up with other defenses, because otherwise his credibility, even if he doesn't testify, and he probably won't, but the credibility of the defense will be affected. You never deny something as a lawyer where the jury will obviously disbelieve you. That affects your credibility. So in the end, I think we can assume and take it as a given that the government will satisfy its burden of proving beyond a reasonable doubt that Trump waived material in front of two unauthorized people and that that material was in fact classified at the time he waived it. Well, we'll wait and we'll see. More interesting things tomorrow. See you then.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.